Blog Talk Radio.
Of the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. I am your host, Steve K9 Kim, from the beautiful city of Los Angeles. But joining us from San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Or as Vice.com puts it, the worst city ever.
Boy, I got to tell you, when I posted that on Facebook, I let everyone know I have no horse in this race. I just thought it was a funny article. So all of you in the Bay Area, please send the angry emails and messages to Vice. Reminder here. We announced last week that we'd be taking this Monday off. Well, I checked the calendar, and it turned out that Labor Day is next Monday. Therefore, Ohio State begins its defense of its national title against Virginia Tech in Blacksburg next week. Gabe also has plans. So we're going to go this week. We're going to preview Mayweather Berto and everything else that happened this past weekend. We'll have a full show. Then we take our customary traditional Labor Day siesta for 1 week, and then we'll be back. And again, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We'll answer your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. If you want to send us a tweet, you can do so at SteveUCNLive and Gabriel_Montoya. But let's get started with round number one, September 12th, live from the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. And it's on pay-per-view for a low retail price of $75 plus the HD cost. Floyd Mayweather returns against Andre Berto. And then in your undercard, Rocky Martinez, Orlando Salido go at it again. And then George Groves and Badu Jack for a super middleweight title. And then Johnny Gonzalez takes on Jonathan Oquendo. Gabe, the question to you is very simple. If you didn't have to theoretically watch Mayweather Berto, because you are still somewhat involved in boxing media with this show, would you take time out to watch Mayweather Berto?
Not live, no. You know, and I probably won't catch it live. You know, I got stuff to do that night, debuting a new play and everything. So I'm not going to watch it live. But it doesn't really move the needle for me. The only thing that I find interesting about it is that everybody is completely writing Berto off, including Mayweather, in that all they're talking about is his retirement, all these other weird angles. He's bought a really expensive car, or the world's most expensive car. It just seems like it's a TV show, and the opponent, as we saw with Pacquiao even in the lead-up, the opponent doesn't really matter anymore to Floyd. It's just, you know, granted, it looks like he still works really hard and everything, but they're kind of sleeping on Berto. And I've seen a few people sleep on guys training up here at a disputed boxing gym, which Berto's working at Virgil's gym, Virgil Hunter's gym, but he's supplementing it with workouts with Remy Korchemny, the sprint coach. He's doing like 2-3 a week, I think, and then he's doing hypoxic training during the week. From all reports that I'm getting, and people that are really looking at the breakdown of him, looking at the numbers, looking at the hard science of Berto, he's in tremendous shape. And that his energy levels, I won't give away some of the stuff, I've heard reports about his sparring and who he's sparring with, that his energy levels from one to like over a dozen rounds is tremendous, that he's not getting tired. And so I'm really, to me, that's the only thing that's making me go, well, is he going to start panicking in there? Because his ring IQ is so low that when Floyd starts figuring him out and landing shots, will he be able to adjust to really kind of fold up the tent as we've seen in the past and just blindly slug it out? That's the only intrigue. Other than that, I wouldn't pay money for this fight. I'd be mad that it's not on regular TV. I'd be mad that it's not on free TV, because it's not. 100-1 shouldn't be on pay-per-view.
So in other words, Gabe, from the intel that you're getting, your deep throat, your inside sources, they're saying that Andre is on that high-octane Petro. Sorry, folks,
yes.
I couldn't resist. Here's the interesting thing about this card, top to bottom. I'm not a fan of the main event. 100-1 is 100-1. But if there's ever going to be a fight where Mayweather will open up, like he did, let's say, against Diego Corrales years ago, or even Arturo Gatti, where he's a little bit more offensive and he exploits some of the technical deficiencies and the defensive holes of his dance partner, this would be the occasion. Second of all, I like the undercard. I asked this on Twitter back on Friday. I said, am I nuts for thinking that Martinez-Salido, the redo, is probably the best fight on paper in the month of September? And the overwhelming majority of my followers said, Steve, we agree. Groves Badu Jack has a chance on paper to be a pretty solid scrap. And then Johnny Gonzalez Okendo, well, that's just a drink of water. But again, I do believe that there is a backlash from May 2nd. And to be completely fair, if it was Manny Pacquiao, win, lose, or draw, in this similar position, fighting an Andre Berto-level guy in, let's say, 4 weeks after September 12th, I believe there would be a similar backlash against that event, because what happened on that night, that $100 Ponzi scheme, was very toxic. And I think there's a lot of people that want to turn the page from both Mayweather and Pacquiao. It just happens that Manny Pacquiao right now is incapacitated. And it'll be interesting to see how he's received next year once the saltwater therapy treatments are concluded with Manny Pacquiao. The other issue is, Gabe, here's the thing that they're trying to sell us very, very hard. And again, this reminds me of that famous quote that you know what I'm talking about with P.T. Barnum, the retirement angle. I would be absolutely stunned if this was his last fight and he stops at 49-0 and does not open up that new MGM arena in Las Vegas next year. Here's what they should do to bolster sales. If this really is your last chance to watch Mr. TBE, here's what they should do, Gabe. They should not just give you a Corona rebate. They should give you a voucher that is good for $50 credit of your money back, that if Floyd Mayweather fights within 5 years of September 12, 2015 and breaks the promise of the retirement, you get $50 back. Then you got a deal.
I like it. You know, I do agree with you. This card, it is good, you know, as pay-per-views go. I'm not as through the roof about the Martinez-Salido rematch. I mean, I think it's going to be good, but, I mean, these guys are pretty long in the tooth to me. Look, there's some wear and tear. Watching Salido fight and get hit anymore, it's becoming less exciting and more like, man, this guy is not going to be able to speak in about 5 years after he retires. I'm a little worried about him. So I think it's going to be all action, but it just makes me a little, I don't know, worried. Smith-Martirosyan, that's another fight that might be a little more explosive than people think. If it's an Ishii Smith fight, then I think it's going to be pretty boring. If it's a Martirosyan fight in terms of what he wants to knock Smith out. That's his plan. I think it could be an explosive fight, and I think it could go a long way for Vonis in terms of winning back fans if he's able to knock Ishii Smith out. I think that would make a lot of people happy. That is Jack versus George Groves, action fight and a super quality fight as relevant to the division. Groves can outbox you for you know most of the fight and then get knocked out. What's not exciting about that? Badu Jack has been stopped before. He's vulnerable. I think it's a really explosive fight. That's going to be hard-nosed. Probably 10-11 rounds before it comes to a den. I kind of have a feeling it won't see the end. So overall, this is a quality pay-per-view for Floyd's send-off. It's just shades of the last fight. After you rip people off for $100 against Pacquiao, how do you come back with a 100-1 deal? I mean, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But at this point, again, Floyd could fight you or me and probably, you know, charge $75 for it and do well.
Can I just tell you something? If he was faced off with you or me, he would finally get his hands moving a lot more than he usually does. I will promise you that. Gabe, here's one of the things that I think really hurt this promotion and the perception of it going in, and also the psychology of it. When they threw out there about 6 to 8 weeks ago that this fight might be on free CBS, it excited people because the whole spectrum of Floyd Mayweather being on network television, you know what? I think at that point most people said, you know what? We don't care if it's Andre Berto. To see Floyd Mayweather on regular terrestrial airwaves, there was certainly a novelty. But, you know, we had been told from the beginning that there were a lot of issues that were going to be problematic in terms of making that a reality. And then once you shifted it back to Showtime pay-per-view, it became a pound-for-pound buzzkill. I'm going to watch the fight. It's my job. I may not watch it live. My main event on Saturday is Michigan State against Oregon and Oklahoma playing Tennessee. And everyone knows the national and international focus will be that big South Florida battle between the mighty Miami Hurricanes and the always dangerous FAU. Moving on, the PBC was on ESPN from the Staples Center. Featherweights in action, Leo Santa Cruz outfights and outboxes Abner Mares over 12 rounds. Scorecards 117, 111 twice, 114, 114. And a super bantamweight co-feature, Hugo Ruiz gets off the canvas and he stops Julio Ceja in five. Gabe, Santa Cruz Mares, oh my God. This is Vasquez Marquez, Barrera Morales combined, wasn't it? I mean, just judging by some of the stuff I saw on Twitter, the pom-pom waivers, I got to tell you, it really wasn't after I watched it. It was a good, solid, competitive fight, had some action, very spirited, very well fought. But I think, again, the rush to hyperbole, it's something to me that is mystifying, Gabe.
I don't see – you know, there's a part of my former job, your current job, that is almost like TV critic. You know, it's your job to kind of look at it and say, what's the dollar value here? Are you really getting value for your money with this pay-per-view card or with this card that you might go to? And you kind of give a yay or a nay on it. But what I watch and observe from major media members is this rush to, like, part of our job is to build the sport up and to support it and to just cheer everything that this new attempt to monopolize the sport and turn into a league, some would say organize the sport, I say monopolize, that we should just prop it up and be part of the positive wave of publicity. That's not the media's job, man. The job is to just report the facts. Is it a good fight or is it a bad fight? Support your answers with facts and then review the fight. That's basically it. What I'm saying here, people just going so crazy. But I'll say this, too, that it was very clear from watching Twitter, and we have some of the same followers, some of the same people we interact with, but also the media and everybody and watching the telecast, it was like everybody was staring at Leo Santa Cruz, watching everything he was doing, and every time he landed a single punch, which was more often than not, they would score it like it was several punches landed, and they would score, well, he's the bigger guy landing the heavier shots, therefore he's winning the fight. I saw a much closer fight. I would say 7-5. The draw, I think that Santa Cruz probably edged it, but I didn't have Morris winning. But I just didn't see this 9-3, 8-4 fight that everybody else saw. I thought Morris was answering back every time he got touched with several punches, not just one. I thought Leo didn't quite know what to do on the inside. And he got a lot of praise for controlling distance. He did, but I think Morris was also on the outside resting. You know, I'm just thoroughly unimpressed by Leo Santa Cruz, I have to say.
Whoa, Gabe, even after he beats a motivated, pumped up, ready to go, Abner Mares, who has a very good track record, and again, we can argue if he's really a 126-pounder or not. You did think Mares was going to win this fight. Even after this victory, Leo Santa Cruz to you is still, meh? Eh?
Yeah.
Really?
He just,
huh.
You know, and I'll tell you why, because the difference here, and even this, like I thought in the eighth round, I thought Abner, like 7 and 8, it seemed like he really absorbed some punishment, starting to bleed, starting to look tired, and then he comes back in the ninth, and I thought he mounted a pretty good effort in the ninth and tenth. I didn't think he was taking too much damage. He was fighting, you know, little ways. I thought he would have boxed. In my vision of him winning, I thought he was in a box smart for the first four rounds, uses better feet. Instead, he just bull rushed Morris or Santa Cruz. It was a weird strategy, but he was backing the kid up, trying to do some damage to the body. I thought a lot of the body work was just missed by a lot of people. But I felt like Leo was getting pushed to the ropes at times late in the fight, and that for having Morris where he did, he was the bigger, stronger Margarito-like guy in the equation, and he didn't seal the deal. I didn't think he closed super strong. And to me, the difference in the fight was that he's 5'7" and more of a 26, and Morris is topping out at 26 and probably more of a 22 and like 5'4 and a half. Size was the difference, not really necessarily skill. I'm just not that impressed with him.
The gun-to-the-moment prediction that I had on Thursday or Friday, because, you know, I was waffling. I said, I will take Leo Santa Cruz for one reason. Gabe, there's a particular pattern in history with Mahrez, is that he usually holds himself together very well through the first half or two-thirds of every fight. In all his big victories, Victor Chinian, Joseph Agbeko, Anselmo Moreno, where he usually jumped out to leads. But as you saw him go into the championship rounds, as fatigue took over, his technique started to unravel. And Abner Mahrez, in the first 6 minutes of this fight, jumped out. He sprinted out like Usain Bolt. But by the fourth round, you got the sense that's about the best he has, and he probably ran out of ideas. And I thought Leo Santa Cruz held himself together technically a little bit better. I thought it was a solid performance. But again, does this victory over Abner Mahrez, who does not have much of a track record of 126, does that mean he's truly in the class of a Vasyl Lomachenko, Gary Russell, Lee Selby? Not sure about that. Gabe, I was at the circus on Saturday. It was at the Forum. And it was the promotion between Shane Mosley and Ricardo Mayorga. And I know that you saw the fight today. Mosley wins predictably, knocking out Mayorga in six. Can I just tell you something? Gabe, I knew this was going to be a bit of a circus. I knew this was going to be bizarre. I knew this was going to be unorthodox. And I got to hand it to him. It lived up to every single expectation. I mean, first of all, they charged me $25 for gas. So note to self, if you're not on the media parking list because the publicist working that event was fired the day before, and I guess she took her parking list and went home, I'm just going to Uber it. The problem is getting an Uber at night in Inglewood, but I'll deal with that later. The other thing was, when you got your credential, and I write about all of this in my story, they kind of sequestered you like people in a prison yard. You had to wait around until five or six people were there, and they escorted you to press row. And then, as you noted, this is something very ironic. This was a show that was supposed to combat sexism in boxing. Let's respect the females. They had scantily clad, bikini-clad women all over ringside, which, again, I'm not making a judgment. Hell, I'm a red-blooded male. I probably enjoyed it. But what was funny was, they actually had two of them do some foxy boxing with these oversized inflated gloves. And I'm saying to myself, I wonder what Maureen Shea thinks. She thought she was the only female bout on this card. And the fight itself, it is what it is. I give Shane and Go Box Promotions credit for actually pulling this off. But Gabe, where is this really going in terms of Shane Mosley as a prize fighter?
That's the thing. I was pretty depressed by the main event, man. Maybe it was just seeing Mayorga's wife openly weeping. Or maybe it was the fact that, like, you know, you look at De La Hoya and Trinidad, when they came back and they used Mayorga to do it, they were dealing with a bit of a dangerous guy. I think, I remember hearing before the De La Hoya fight that Mayorga was at the tables till like 2 or 3 a.m., you know, smoking and drinking, so maybe not so much for that fight. But for the Trinidad fight, it felt like he was in pretty good shape. Even with Oscar, he seemed to put up a fight, caught Oscar with a good uppercut. He had absolutely nothing in this fight, and you could see it from the very beginning. And, you know, what this really was just kind of watching a prize fighter that needs to make some money. As one article noted, he described himself to the media as basically a transient that's fighting for the money at this point. And that's what we saw, was a guy take a beating from Shane, let Shane live his dream. Shane's legs, it's hard to tell where Shane was at because he just couldn't miss, on Mayorga. And ended up, you know, knocking his teeth out, which is, you know, great. Now the guy's going to spend money on getting the teeth back because I'm sure he doesn't have insurance, and that's not exactly cheap to get your teeth replaced. It was just depressing to me, dude. It was everything that's kind of wrong with boxing. You know, and I hate to be that guy, but it just, where is it going? Hopefully nowhere. Hopefully Shane retires. He called out Kell Brook and Marquez, but, I mean, he's not at 47. What weight is he going to fight at? Whatever weight people will show up in? Like, the whole thing just seemed, I don't know, cynical at best.
You know, as I said last week, I was going there for morbid curiosity. And after it was through, I could tell you, it was satisfied. Don't believe me? Ask Doug Fisher, David Avila, or Mike Baca. We are in the trenches together. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Let's hit our Twitter accounts. And leading off are Ricky Henderson, the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. PBC had a good event on Saturday, but did they make any money, or it probably doesn't matter? You know, I really don't know. They finally had a really good crowd locally, right over 13,000. And again, we don't know if that was papered up or not. But I do think it's an important step for the PBC, especially on these bigger stages. And I don't mean Bounce TV, but the shows that are really important, specifically NBC and ESPN, they needed to deliver a really good fight. At the very least, Gabe, I think they did that this weekend.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because, I had thought, initially when the PBC came out, and then I thought it would all kind of culminate, they would really try to crown themselves with the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight, and it turned out to not be the case. I mean, there's a lot of events surrounding it, and they were just kind of saturating the market. This fight at the Staples felt like the culmination of all the money they've lost or slash invested in creating this brand and kind of blitzing the airwaves with PBC. It was, and it was funny because I was getting ready to leave for a party, and I wanted to watch this fight live. I was very excited for it, and free had nothing to do with it, and just that it was a good matchup. And I put it on, and I'm all excited, and then, crap, there's Teddy Atlas running his mouth for the whole broadcast. But then also, they come in by themselves, and, here's a conversation that's never happened. Like, hey, homeboy, did you catch Morris, Santa Cruz? Yeah, man. When he came into that Hans Zimmer, made me think of Gladiator, man. That shit gets me all riled up. Nobody ever says that, go Raiders. It's just, the Hans Zimmer stuff is just ridiculous. They kind of got it right. The crowd, Lance Pugmire, an opinion I trust, said it was an electric atmosphere. I imagine it was. It looked like it. But then all those weird little bells and whistles trying to change the face of boxing and then keeping just a voice I could do without in Teddy, that stuff, left me flat. But overall, it seemed, I want to see what the club, report is on that show, because I am curious to see if their giveaway ratio versus all their other shows, if it's changed, if they really made some money on this card.
Yeah, here's another question from Joshua Provodnikov. I know I've never mentioned this before, and it may shock you coming from me, but is Provodnikov possibly the Rios Forum fight? Okay, Brandon Rios, if they could clear the Forum on November 7th, and I understand there is an issue there, is going to be co-headlining a top-ranked show with Vasyl Lomachenko. Bob Arum told me that last week. Wouldn't tell me who the dance partner is for Brandon Rios, but my spies tell me that rising from the ashes, like the Phoenix, is a fight between Brandon Rios and Tim Bradley, not Ruslan Provodnikov. And I could hear the screaming online from Joshua as I said that.
I like that fight, man. I think that's a super exciting fight. It's not, it's basically, in some ways, a similar fight, but minus the power punching to Rios. After he loses to Tim Bradley, can keep fighting. I think even winning against Provodnikov, and he'd be just seriously damaged goods. I think top rank smart. They know what they have. They know that they've got a guy that maybe has 3-4 fights in him. Maybe you can build them towards something big once more, especially Brandon, is focused, ready to train and be in great shape. I'm sure he is. And, against Provodnikov, you're cutting that in half at least. So,
Mr. Blue. I do. I think it is a poor man's version of Chavez Taylor 1. I believe that Tim Bradley's quickness and his athleticism, advantage in speed, would get him out to an early lead. But there's been a particular pattern where Bradley gets banged up late, and we saw that against Jesse Vargas. And the one thing about Brandon Rios, especially if we're going to see the real courageous version of Tim Bradley like we have in the past, he will start to land heavy shots on Bradley late in the fight, and I think things will get very interesting going down the home stretch. Here's a tweet from Mr. Blue. How do Canelo and Cotto fare against a prime De La Hoya, Gabe?
Wait a minute. Say that again. Canelo versus
How do Canelo and Cotto fare against a prime Oscar De La Hoya?
I think he's maybe like a Compass, like a prime Compass De La Hoya would have been. I think Canelo would land his shot. You know, I mean, maybe Canelo's not that slow, but they both have kind of compact shots. They have all the punches. They don't have the most head movement in the world. I mean, Canelo's starting to get more upper body movement the last 3-4 fights. But I think as he slows down, he becomes more stationary. I think Oscar at 54, you know, which was not his best weight, even though he had some success there, I think it would be tough, but I think he would win. Like pretty close fight, though, 7-5.
A prime De La Hoya with the speed and the guy that could bounce on his feet a little bit and change distances, I think is a superior fighting machine to both Canelo and Cotto. And also one thing that's really underrated about Oscar De La Hoya, it was his durability. He threw away the Pacquiao fight. That was at the very end, and the body shot to Hopkins. But against some heavy hitters like Trinidad, Ike Corte, and some other fighters at 47, 54, and 60, generally, he held up very, very well. And Mr. Blue also has a comment. In my opinion, the size difference was the deciding factor in the Santa Cruz-Morris fight. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We're here for at least another hour, possibly going all the way to 9 p.m. Eastern time, depending on your participation. Remember, next week at this time, Gabe will be taking care of some business on his end, and I'll be in front of the couch watching Ohio State, Virginia Tech. So you got anything to say regarding September 12th? And our question is, will you be purchasing this pay-per-view? And Santa Cruz Morris, where is it on your fight of the year list, Gabe?
It isn't for me. It just isn't. I almost feel like it hasn't happened yet. 585, you're live on the next round. 585.
Hey, Gabe, it's Jake from Rochester.
How you doing, Jake?
Hey. I was just thinking about, like, this era and how there's so many good fighters. And there's so many good fighters fighting, you know, just not up-to-par talent pretty regularly. And, I mean, you look at Terrence Crawford, who's now on his PBC type opponent list, and you think, like, you know, boxing isn't lacking for talent at all. I mean, there's a lot of good young fighters across a lot of different divisions, but if you look, I don't know, you just take featherweight, for example. I mean, we'll never see, you know, Lomachenko versus Santa Cruz. We'll never see Walters versus what's his name? That guy from England that just came over.
Lee Selby. Right?
Yeah, we'll never. He's a Heyman guy, is he not?
Yeah, and Carl Frampton and Scott Quigg. Again, you're right. The politics has really extinguished a lot of these fights where they become non-starters, and that has been problematic. It's almost as if the division of the Cold War between Top Rank and Golden Boy, in many respects, because the scope of the fighters involved is so much greater now, perhaps things are worse than they were back 4 or 5 years ago, believe it or not.
How do you guys see this era being remembered? Because I don't, as far as I know, this many top fighters in every division didn't avoid fighting each other for the length of their whole careers ever. Am I correct?
You know, I'd have to examine that more, but Gabe, isn't the important thing that the fighters are getting paid? Isn't that the new mantra?
Yeah, I think maybe it'll be looked at as a time of change. You know, if you look at all the things in their totality, what's happened in the anti-doping across combat sport in general. Now all the stuff within these last year or so, everybody's looking at weight. I think that's really big right now in MMA, weight cutting. I think it's going to be because, you know, athletic commissions regulate both MMA and boxing. That's going to be huge. And I think seeing the whole promotional model, as Al Heyman's trying to change it, if it ends up successful, we're going to be looking at back at this era as one of change. Just even the way the media platforms like Bounce TV, True TV, De La Hoya TV, everything changing, going digital, everybody's watching on their phones. The whole game is wide open, I think, you know. But in terms of the fighters not fighting each other, it's kind of like looking at TV. Like, there's more dates, right, for them. And in your cable package, you have 500 channels. Well, how many of those channels are good? And how many of those TV dates with all those fighters spread out over them are going to be good, you know? It's how I feel about the NFL. The more teams there were, the shittier the games got, by and large. So, I don't know. Maybe a period of dilution is how we'll look at it.
How many years do you think it'll take for the PBC to match Santa Cruz with another top Heyman 126
founder? That's a good question. Because he's, Gabe, the fact that his family seems to revere Al Heyman, he named his newborn son Al. It seems to me he's got preferred status on the Heyman totem pole, on the hierarchy. I don't know. I mean, do you ever see, realistically, let's say within the near future, a Leo Santa Cruz-Gary Russell matchup?
No, because I think also ultimately Al's serving his own need. So if he can kind of create the multiverse or, you know, the stay busy fights kind of within his own universe, you know, that the rest of boxing enjoys. A guy can have a belt, be a champion in a division, and just kind of fight over off this side while another guy does the same. If Al can do that, especially with the way he likes to play with weights, like one time a guy is here, look at Adrian Broner. He was at one weight, now he's at a different weight, getting a title shot, still staying relevant, still being AB without the interviews. You know, I think that it's going to serve his own interest is to stave off those fights. You know, and then they'll kind of say, well, the old-time fighters did it. You know, Sugar Ray Robinson has a bunch of gimmicks on his record. It couldn't always be main events. You know, it couldn't always be big. I've seen that argument talking with Julian Williams, an interview I did with him a couple weeks ago. He was saying the same thing.
Gabe, but did you point out to him that there were years when Ray Robinson fought over 20 times?
Well, that's where the argument gets dicey. No, I didn't point that out to him, but that's the truth.
I mean, that's a fact. I would just say, I would actually say, Julian, can I have your email? Because I'm going to send you the box rec. And there were years when literally he fought more times than you might in a half a decade. That's why, to me, you got to look deeper. And these fighters keep pointing out this, the two or three tune-up fights that Ray Robinson had. Without understanding, he literally sometimes had 15 to 20 fights. I mean, my favorite Ray Robinson statistic is that in between his loss to Jake LaMotta, where he rematched him 3 weeks later, people don't realize he had a 10-round tune-up fight in between that. You can't even get most fighters today to go back into gym within 3 weeks of their last fight if it went more than four rounds. These were different men.
Very much so. You know, I always wonder.
Jake, anything else?
I was just saying that even if you're only fighting four or five times a year, you're allowed to take one or two of these level fights. I understand, but I mean, three out of your five fights better be against high-level guys. I mean, it's just inexcusable. I agree. Yeah,
not – again, this climate makes it very difficult to do such. I mean, listen, I think Golovkin was very fortunate that Lemieux was made what I call a godfather offer. It was one he could not refuse, or he would be taking, in my opinion, a lot of undue criticism for fighting another guy that may be at that level where people were going to really start to be critical.
Well, I was more talking about like the Sugar Ray Leonards. You know, when you point out to Floyd fans that Sugar Ray Leonard beat Benitez or fought Benitez, Duran, and Hearns in an 18-month span, and that's Floyd hasn't beaten a fighter that even one of those fighters as good as an 18-year career, then they go, well, he also fought two bums during that time. We're like, well, yeah, but, I mean, he's fighting, like, legends at that time, and that's
right.
That's excusable.
Jay, look at a young Fernando Vargas. Now, perhaps this was not the best way to do it, and I think they had their reasons why, but I think in a year span, Vargas fought Winky Wright, Ike Corte, and Felix Trinidad all before his 21st or 22nd birthday. It's a different breed even from then. Jake, we got to get running. Thank you very much. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe?
I always wonder about the modern athlete. Like, you think about old-time basketball players that are running around in Chuck Taylors and playing, you know, a ton of games. You didn't hear, like, you know, oh, my guy's got a stress fracture, or he's got a little bit of plantar fasciitis. Like, with more knowledge, I'm not, you know, crapping on knowledge, but it seems like with more knowledge, guys get hangnail and they're out for a while, or a little tired, my electrolytes are off. I kind of wonder about the modern athlete having more knowledge and actually access to better ways of getting in shape, but kind of being softer almost as a result of it, like being a really, you know, high-speed or, you know, high-maintenance Italian sports car that you can only drive, like, 10 miles and then you got to go get a tune-up, you know? But it drives really fast. I just wonder about these guys. They want more for less. 860, you're live on the next round.
Hey, how are you doing tonight? CT.
CT, welcome aboard.
Hey, what's up? Just let me talk about the fight a little bit. I picked Santa Cruz to win last week, and the reason point, I haven't seen the versatility in Mara since the knockout, and I think him thinking, you know, he's a bigger man in this fight, which wasn't the case. I knew that Santa Cruz's volume punching and his pressure would get to Mara's, but he just, you know, Mara's fought Leo Santa Cruz's type of fight, and when you play into somebody's type of fight who's naturally, you know, good at throwing volume punching, you know, he tend to favor, you know, Leo Santa Cruz in that type of fight. I just thought Leo Santa Cruz is the typical Leo Santa Cruz in this fight. And I thought his body was screaming to get out of 122 anyways. Kind of a, you know, wiry type guy, kind of broad in his shoulders. And I knew he was going to make 126 pretty comfortably. Do you guys think Morrow's will probably drop down the way after this?
Gabe, it certainly seems like, based on his ineffectiveness, especially in the second half of that fight. And the other thing is, Admiral Morrow's, even on this weekend, did not face a great puncher in Leo Santa Cruz. Doesn't that seem like the wise move for him, perhaps going back down to junior featherweight?
I would say so. You know, hindsight's 20/20. And looking at the fight, it's interesting is that everybody was criticizing, you know, us included, Leo Santa Cruz for not facing a name. And it's pretty smart of Al Haymon to bring him Abner Morris, who's really – I think this shows, like, he's at 22. He wasn't even that big of a puncher, you know, at his natural weight, I think, at 118. You know, he's a solid puncher, but never a knockout guy. He was just kind of strong. So at 26, we got a good name, a champion who's very skilled and experienced, and who ultimately, I mean, he just kept smashing into Leo Santa Cruz in the first few rounds. And after a while, like you said, CT, Santa Cruz kind of just played his own game and just was the wall that kept coming in and closing down the cutting off the ring, making the ring smaller. But he just, you know, let the little guy kind of tire himself out. I think go back to 122. There's a lot left in Abner. And I didn't see a gun-shy guy. I don't see the effects of the knockout, personally. I think, you know, he's just in there with a bigger dude. And at some point, you know, what is he going to do? Just keep going at him until he gets knocked out? He found ways to survive. And I still think he kind of came back a little bit, you know, in spots at the end.
Okay. Well, that's all I wanted to talk about today. Thank you.
All right, CT, all right, as always, thank you very much. If you want to jump in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
I had a question, actually. You, David Avila, and Doug Fisher were at the circus. And is this official? Are you three just not going to cover PBC fights, or was it Doug just there to kind of cap off Mosley's career? Because I know you and David have kind of made that stance. I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, I mean, Dave made it really clear and actually wrote an article saying I'm not doing this. And me personally, I made a stand. If you want to declare war against members of the media and play the game of access, I'm like, I'd rather have my right to tell the truth and just kind of do what I want. I'm not playing that game where it's a quid pro quo that if we give you this credential, you have to, like, basically act as our publicist and say great things and say how great we are. Nah. Honestly, I've been to enough fights. I go to a lot of fights since the PBC has started and they've inundated the boxing schedule. There's no drop-off in my work. There's still plenty of things to cover. And it'll be business as usual. And I'll be honest. If this Mosley-Mayorga fight was this upcoming Saturday, where there's college football on, I wouldn't have gone to it. And truth be told, if this fight wasn't 5 minutes from Doug Fisher's house, I'm not so sure he would have gone to it. Okay, now David Avila's a soldier. He would have gone, trust me, okay? So, you know, again, people say, well, how did it feel not being at Santa Cruz Mares? It felt the way it felt. I watched it when I got home, and I enjoyed the fight, and the sun came out tomorrow. Folks, as I like to say, it is what it is.
All right. In the 619, you're live on the next round. 619.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Yes, you're there. Hey. Talk to us.
This is Juan from San Diego.
Juan, what's going on?
Yeah, I just didn't hear the beep. How you guys doing?
Doing well.
Good, man. How you doing?
Great. I did watch the fight. I called a couple of weeks ago and told you guys that I didn't think it was going to be a good fight because I don't know if you remember, I told you that Theo Santa Cruz was basically boring us to death and Abner Mares was, you know, a very dirty fighter and he hasn't been exciting in the last couple of fights. I'll be truthful. I enjoyed the fight. I thought it was a good fight. As I said in my, you know, in my letter to Doug Fisher today, I thought it was a good fight, a good, decent fight between two high-quality fighters. But that's it. I don't think it was the fight of the year. I think it was good enough to keep me entertained. I had a good time watching it. I think this year hasn't been particularly good with fights. I think that you can count in your hand the number of fights that I have actually been entertaining. This was one of them. Not the best one, but it was okay. I thought both guys showed a lot of, a lot of passion in there. They were trying to be good. They were trying to win. I give both men credit. I think Leo Santa Cruz was as exciting as he could be. And you know what? I was impressed by him. I rarely disagree with you, Gable, but I did think the guy did more than just be the bigger guy. I thought he did some adjustments there in the middle rounds. He started to impose his will. And, you know, a guy like that, they have the kind of will that that guy has, he's going to be difficult to beat. This is the first time I actually say this. Leo Santa Cruz might be a tougher out than many people think. This guy is a little bit underrated. Even by myself, I had him a little bit underrated. I think he can give anybody a run for his money just based on the kind of mindset he has. He wants to win. He has, you know, he puts everything into it. Now, on the PBC, the ESPN broadcast, man, I was being tortured by Teddy Atlas there. This guy, yeah, I'll tell you, man, this guy didn't stop talking during the first 3 minutes of the round. I was getting annoyed because he was getting on the way of the action going on to the ring. You know, if you take a look at Jim Lampley, and Lampley has been criticized many times, but the guy lets the fighters fight, and he just comes in when he has to come in. If you hear the old school, guys like this guy, Howard Cosell, the guy just talks when he needs to talk. He lets the fighter do the talking. Teddy Atlas was just, man, overanalyzing everything. I was like, damn, I was about to put mute on the controller, man.
Paulie and Teddy had the same thing where they, unless the other announcers will acknowledge the point that they've made and point it out, it's like they just have to keep hammering it and hammering it. But he didn't get range, or, you know, he did this, or he needs to do this. And they just talk through the whole thing. You can be comfortable with dead air. And just like you said, I read your email in Doug's mailbag, and I was like, man, that guy gets it. I mean, I watched Mars and Leo Santa Cruz with, like, the volume at, like, 5. But I just couldn't take it. I just wanted to be able to hear that there was a fight on, but I just couldn't take hearing what Teddy had to say. It just was like, man, I would tell him to leave my party if he was over at my house talking that much.
guys, I have a question, and I said this on Twitter based on the fact that it was a good fight, at least in my opinion. They drew very well, and that maybe both guys have certain limitations. Wouldn't it be a natural fit for the PBC to do a rematch sooner rather than later, given the fact they need to have more nights like this?
I think so. They should do it. I think those guys, they match up well. People were excited. I was actually in my Twitter feed. I have a lot of Mexican sportscasters that, you know, they don't have a saying in what the PBC, they're not putting their pom-poms. They're very critical. And they were excited about the fight. They were saying, look, this is what boxing's all about. The guys bring passion. They're throwing punches. Yeah, they're not as accurate as let's say, Vasquez Marquez. But it's good. It's still good fighting. I think it was entertaining, and that's what. Even though it's free or whatever you want to call it, I still pay more than $100 to get ESPN on my cable package. So it's not free. It's something I pay for, and I like the product. Now, another thing about this, and you know, I'm the first on the PBC. I also have to give them credit when the credit is due. This was a good fight. This was a good card. What was the other guy's name? Reese and Seha. That was pretty. I thought I needed a knockout like that, like something unexpected, something that just. I was drinking my scotch. I almost spilled it. I was like, hey, I told my wife, come here and see this. It was a good knockout. She was like, damn, that was a good knockout. And that got me pumped up. That's why I watch the fights. I just don't care for box exhibitions. I'm done with that. So if they rematch, I'm all for it, man. Come on, let's do it.
All right, Juan, thank you very much. And I do have to point this out, though. Morris Santa Cruz, I give credit where it's due. Golden Boy developed a hell of a fight. Gabe?
Thanks,
Tyler. It's the truth. It is the truth. Someone argue with me, please. It is the truth. A couple of tweets here before we go back to the calls. Here's one, Bradley. Going back to the old Sergey Kovalev avatar, ESPN was hyping Leo Santa Cruz and not saying much about Mahrez. Kind of in line with what you said, Gabe. And then Loon Leo, seems like the top-ranked stable is taking a holiday this year. Also, any idea who Special K Kell Brook is fighting next? Gabe wrote this last week. It's been a very down, disappointing, desultory year for top rank. If you look at their blue chip roster on the top end, their stars, they've all fought just once or twice. And I don't know how many of them have had these defining fights. Not a great year in 2015 for Bob Arum's company.
It's not a great argument for the old guard, you know, if you really look at it. You know, Oscar has found some big fights for his guys. He's got, you know, if his company is able to pull this off and get, you know, both those wins, that's huge for Golden Boy. Bob Arum, I mean, he's got a piece in Crawford, fading star in Bradley and fading star in Pacquiao. Bradley could have a little renaissance here towards the end of his career, but he's a guy that everybody just has too much wear and tear on him to go much longer. You know, their future is very young in Verdejo, Jose Ramirez. I mean, those are guys that are going to be legit products, but I mean, that's going to be a year or so before they're,
right,
you know, really doing it. What are they doing this year?
It is what I would call a transition era, because a guy like Oscar Valdez, when does he become a guy good enough to compete for a belt? And with Verdejo, with that hand injury, he hasn't been nearly as active as Top Rank wanted coming into the year. Here's a tweet from Jack Giacomo regarding Santa Cruz Morris. Thought it was a solid fight in terms of action, but they didn't land many solid shots. That is something I will certainly agree with. At the top of the hour, we'll go through some news and notes on the next round. Steve Kim, Gabe Montoya, here till at least 8:30 Eastern time. Gabe?
I think that's a big reason why I felt like the fight was much closer than people were giving it credit for. And in full disclosure, I was fully sober for the fight. Didn't vape anything.
No.
Didn't drink anything. So I was getting ready to go party seriously all night at a friend's 40th. So I was like, I was eating.
Whoa.
You know, I was just tuned into the fight. So I don't know how many people that have scored the fight can say the same. And I really thought it was close. That 114, this is my gripe, and I don't want to be negative about it, because I fully support your choice to not cover the PBC, David's and Doug's especially. You know, you guys are three people I really respect, and I follow your lead in a lot of ways. But I remember that you watching Mosley De La Hoya 2 and
feeling that Mosley won, nobody agreed with me, and you guys at ringside agreed with me. And at a fight like this where it's super close and everybody's just staring at Leo and the broadcast is all pro-Leo, I kind of want guys that are a little more discerning at ringside. It would be my only gripe, but I'm not going to make you sit through Hans Zimmer just so I can have better opinions.
Well, don't worry about that, Gabe. I got the remix tape. Don't worry about that. I got the greatest hits DVD, okay?
You're going to get that on cassette for your workout.
Yeah, my Walkman.
Exactly. Let's hit the phone line to the 530. You're live on the next round. That's hilarious.
Hello. Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, guys. This is Rich from NorCal.
Rich, how you doing?
What's up, man?
Good. Hey, I wanted to ask you guys about the 154 division. A lot of times, you know, we look for fighters to start coming up when they start dominating certain divisions. Are there any fighters you guys see coming out of 154 going to 160 over the next year or two?
Yeah, a young man that we mentioned a couple of minutes ago, Gabe, Julian Williams.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's heading up to 60. I think he's going to be dominant at 54. I think that guy, he's going to be a problem. And I feel like they're building him in like almost like a, dare I say, Hagler-esque kind of way. He's workmanlike. I think his excitement is going to come from an exciting opponent that brings that out of him. But he's content to just break you down in a very professional, very cold, vicious manner. And they're just always in shape. And every time they come up here, they'll be at the beginning of camp and at the end of camp, they do like mini camps. To appear as undisputed. He does the hypoxic, he does the hyperbaric, and they train with Remy Korchemny. And it just really wakes his body up, but they're always in great shape. I never see him between fights looking anything but. I think that guy's going to be a problem. I think Willie Nelson could be a problem for people after his big win over Tony Harrison. He's back in the gym, looks in great shape, and is just reinvigorated with his new team. I think those are kind of dark horses. I mean, granted, they're on my beat. I think 54 could heat up. Bonas is another guy. People look at him and kind of dismiss him because he's passed on fights. But I've never seen the guy happier, more in tune. And I got to watch him at Wild Card. We got to watch him kind of go through a few gyms down there. Up here, he seems so in tune. And the shape that he's in from the first sparring session I saw to just like last week, it's like night and day. So those are the three guys I would look at. As far as the young guys, I don't know. Julian Williams would be my young guy. I'll say that.
Gabe, I've got a name, but his career is going very, very quickly to Bolivian. But I think he's a tough out stylistically and very talented. Demetrius Andrade. But again,
yeah.
he's right on that off-ramp of Bolivian.
That's the guy I was going to ask you about next was Demetrius Andrade. Where do you guys see him going? Because I really thought he was going to turn into something, but then, you know, he fought Brian Rose, and he dropped out of the fight with Charlo twice, and I'm like, what the hell are you going to do, man? Come on, you got to fight somebody.
I don't know. Well, I want to see what the litigation result is with Rock Nation and Banner Promotions and Star Boxing, but I don't feel much sympathy for him. He had a valid contract. I think Banner and Star had done a very nice job in guiding him. He was going to fight for $500,000 against Charlo, and he decides to basically backdoor them. There are no sympathetic figures here in this particular instance. He's not getting a Hallmark greeting card from me.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there, Steve. I mean, I think he really I can understand, though. He got impatient. I mean, as much as I like Artie, I don't have much of a relationship with Joe. I've talked to him. But I felt like they were, as you would put it, TV packaging him. They weren't really keeping him very busy. For a young fighter, he got to a title so fast and with so much inactivity and with not much professional resistance. I was surprised when he showed some grit. He had to kind of prove it to me at the top. And even then, I still am not quite sure what he's got in terms of grit, determination, ability to come back and win. There's a lot there. But Rock Nation tries to swoop in. And I could see why the kid was looking to take some money and get somewhere. He wanted more exposure. But that's not the way you do it. You sign a contract, you got to be up to your word. That's just the way it is.
I was listening to an episode of Leave It in the Ring. This was quite a few months back where you guys had Andrade on as an actual guest, you and David Duenas. And he said during that interview that two or three tune-ups tell me that I'm going to face 3G at 160, and I'll take those two tulips, and I'll be ready in like a year. Well, it's been like a year since that happened, right? I mean,
it's been a while since we did that interview, and he actually kind of – he really made me want to pay attention to him. I thought he was really personable, had a lot of good things to say, but then, you know, there's – and it felt all pretty natural. I didn't feel like he was getting a radio voice or like an on-camera voice. You know, you can always tell when people are kind of faking it. He seemed like a real dude that wants to face real dudes, but now he's, you know, now he's in court.
Actions speak louder than words. I have one last thing, guys. Do you guys have any idea who's going to be fighting Blessed on the Canelo Cotto undercard?
Oh, you mean S.O. Snooze? I have no idea. I mean, the Twitter chatter was, and I don't know how valid this is, that he had sent out an offer to some guy named Zach Dunn, I think, from Australia.
What?
You know, the good news is that during that stretch, if he's on that card November 21st, it affords me a good 45 minutes to an hour to go down to the Mandalay Bay Sportsbook and, well, get updates on the Miami-Georgia Tech game.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks. Hey, thanks for the line, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you. 347-215-7598. This is the next round with Gabe Montoya and Steve Kim. Gabe?
Blocked phone number. You're live on the next round. Unlisted caller? Nope. All right. You are our first knockdown. In the 3-2-3, I think this is fight on, gentlemen. Fight on. You're live on the next round. Sanch?
Uh-oh. Yeah. Is he pulling the Sarkeesian? Uh-oh.
Let's see. Sanch, are you there?
A lot of traffic there in L.A.
Wow, yeah, I guess so. We'll come back to him. 443? Yeah, we'll go back to him. 443, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, how you doing? Nice. This is Steve from Maryland calling.
Good, what's going on?
Man?
Go
good,
Terps.
Hey, Gabe, I wanted to touch on a comment you made at the beginning of the show. You said how Mars's inside work on Saturday was kind of underappreciated, and I would definitely agree with you partly, but I think one of the big things on his downfall as far as game plan goes, he didn't really have much of a jab going at all. If you look at the CompuBox statistics, he only popped off about 7 jabs. So in my opinion, if you really want to get your inside work noticed, you got to jab your way in and then back the guy up and really show that effective aggression. And I just don't think he was doing that, which is why he didn't really get a lot of credit for that inside work.
I thought those CompuBox numbers were pretty insane. Insanely, just considering how slanted the broadcast was. I kind of wonder if a guy like Teddy, who just nonstop, super loud talking about through the whole fight, you got to be able to hear him at ringside. I can't help but think that he's kind of influencing the people that are near him the way he talks. But look, I know the CompuBox guys are behind him. But regardless, I felt that he had thrown more than 7 jabs. I thought that stat was kooky. But I agree with you that if he would have – what I thought he was going to do was kind of be elusive in the early quarter of the fight and in the first quarter and kind of bounce in and out and use the jab, going up and down with it. I could see that he was trying to back Leo up and do some body, you know, some damage to his body, put his shoulder into him rather than a jab. It just didn't work. I think you're right. But he still seemed – maybe I'm counting activity over, you know, and counting it as achievement. I don't know. But I'd say do it again. I'd watch that fight again.
Guys, one of the things that I've noticed about Abner Morris, when his technique starts to unravel – he has a very bad habit, especially in the second half of fights, and I think it caused a lot of his low blows against Agbeko. The fatigue causes him to break down in terms of his stance, and his head starts to come out in front of his front foot, and so he's off balance, and he's almost like throwing punches looking down at the floor, and he doesn't have very good footwork working his way inside. I think that took place again, and one thing about Leo Santa Cruz, I thought throughout the 36 minutes of the fight, fundamentally, he did not unravel nearly as much as Abner Morris did.
Yeah, great point, Steve. Hey, one other question I wanted to ask you guys. This is kind of out there, but I know you guys have a lot of inside information. Since we're talking about kind of like featherweights in the lighter divisions this week, do you guys ever see any of these Japanese fighters like Uchiyama or Muria ever getting in the mix and kind of crossing over and getting on American TV, especially when you're talking like the 118 to 126 divisions?
The word that I've been told for years is that these guys make such a good living in Japan that they really don't need to come out here. I mean, if you look at the few Japanese guys that have come out to the States in the last 5, 6, 7 years, whether it was that guy, I think it was Aki Shimoda against Rico Ramos, then you had the older Japanese fighter that took on Nonito Donaire on HBO, they always come out here on the back half of the career, or when their primes are basically over and they go in for that last one payday. I have to be honest with you, in terms of the really good and high-end Japanese fighters, I don't see it, because I think economically they are supported very well out there in Asia.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look at guys like Linares and Valero that went over, out there and were making a good living in Japan. We were talking to Justin Fortune, and he had fought out there. And he talked about, like, in Japan, they treat you like a king, man. They really value their fighters. They value that warrior class. And he was like, dude, they give you a bento box, like this whole mat for you to, like, an area to, like, chill out in. And, like, he's like, they really treat you like royalty as a fighter there. And that was just a visiting guy. I can only imagine if you're fighting out of there. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the TV out here doesn't seem to be that in love with the little guys, which I've never really understood. But that's just kind of the way it is.
Yeah, no, that's tough just because you're starting to see now some of these guys pop up on, like, a few pound-for-pound lists here and there. You've got Yamanaka, Inui, Yoshiyama, Muria, you know, popping up on pound-for-pound lists here, and it's just a shame that we might never get to see them, you know, kind of cross over and really make some big fights.
Although you are going to see the Kameda brothers since they are on the PBC. There is
that.
That
is true.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you for
the call.
1 hour down, at least another 30 minutes to go. Let's go through some news and notes. Gabe, a couple of things, speaking of Top Rank. There is talk of a fight sometime in the fall, I think later half of the fall, Nicholas Walters and Yuri Gamboa at 130. Gabe, yay or nay?
At 130, I mean, I think it'd be a fun fight. I mean, style-wise, yeah. I don't think it's a good fight for Gamboa. I think he's just going to get used up at this point by larger people that are just going to beat him down. I'd watch.
I like it. I mean, Gabe, here's the thing. Walters, I don't think, can safely make 126. I mean, looking at that body at the weigh-in on the afternoon of June 12th, listen, there's various reasons why guys don't make weight, and I don't think all weight misses are the same. That guy simply did not have much to cut. He's at that stage of his life at age, what, 28, 29? Your metabolism changes, and it's time to move up north. Gamboa, as we saw against Crawford, can compete to a certain level, but he is not a lightweight. And again, can he really go all the way down to 26? I think this is a fun fight. I think the speed of Gamboa would riddle Walters early, who would then have to adjust. Count me in for this fight. Also, Aram said that they are still working on a Nonito Donaire-Scott Quigg fight. The question is, will it be in Dubois or England? Gabe, Quigg Donaire, to me, is an outstanding crossroads fight. I think it'll say a lot about just how much left does Donaire have and how good is Scott Quigg.
I couldn't agree more. No, that's a hell of a crossroads fight. It's a classic. And I think, you know, Nonito sounds like, you know, that he is more committed to training than he'd been. He's not back at Undisputed where he peaked, I think, training with these guys up here, going through that whole regiment that now a lot of fighters are going through. But still, his body looks better. He looks more comfortable in the ring. It looks more like he wants to be there in his last couple fights, I think. Let's see if he can carry that over. I just think that, though, that Quigg is going to be too much. He's sound in terms of his technique. I think the kid's got grit. He's got power. He's got a high ring IQ. I think he wins this fight, but I think it's going to be a nice test for him, and I think it'll be kind of a brave last stand at the top for Nonito Donaire.
I think if Donaire can win this fight, I think he seals his credentials to Canastota. I really do, because if you look at some of the victories of Donaire, it was really a byproduct of some really adroit matchmaking. And you go to the year where he won the Fighter of the Year, 2012, he basically won it off volume and being a fighter willing to do the year-round VADA program, but the actual victories, he was a decided favorite in every single fight. So he did, as Chris Rock would say, he did what he was supposed to. Against Quigg on the road, young, hungry lion. Oh, boy, I tell you what, that would be a very good feather in the cap. And, Gabe, I'll say it right now, October 3rd on Showtime from WKRP in Cincinnati, Adrian Broner, Khabib Alakverdiev, Jose Pedraza against Edner Cherry Bomb. Gabe, I'm going to be at the Home Depot Center, or the StubHub Center, for the Victor Postol-Lucas Matisse fight. But I think this is by far the best Showtime card of the year. I'm really looking forward to this show right here.
I think it's going to be bombs away. You know, I think, you know, Broner and Khabib are going to be a good matchup. I think that could be a good action fight. I don't consider Broner to be necessarily deserving of the title shot, nor Khabib. But, you know, it's the WBA, you know. I think I'm eligible for a title shot with them. But Pedraza versus Cherry, that's a nice fight, man. That's going to be another bombs away kind of fight. I think, you know, this is, you know, finally Showtime gets something good, because they've been, I mean, geez, they've been in the toilet this year. I mean, but I think Steve, you've certainly picked the right fight to be at the StubHub Center. That's going to be a special fight. I think Postol versus Matisse.
Well, also, the other fight is near my backyard, and it, to me, is a very solid card. But regardless if the WBA should be sanctioning Broner Alakverdiev as a title fight, you know, you can make an argument against it, and I would not disagree. But that being said, it's not going to affect the potential action inside the ring. And one thing about Alakverdiev, you can make an argument that he might be undefeated. I thought he beat Jesse Vargas. But Jesse Vargas in Las Vegas is about nearly as unbeatable as Floyd Mayweather. And Khabib is going to be in the face of Adrian Broner the whole night. And win, lose, or draw, stylistically, I think for the fans, it's a much better fight. And Edmund Cherry, I've always said, at 135, 130, he is a very tough out, and he's what I like to call an honest prize fighter. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. If you want to send us a tweet, you can do so at SteveUCNLive and Gabriel_Montoya. Here's a question from our good friend Dominic Verdin listening in. Well, Gennady Golovkin ever get Cotto Canelo, or are we going to see a rematch with Cotto Canelo, possibly a trilogy? That's certainly possible, isn't it, Gabe?
Well, Triple G's got a fight scheduled with a pretty dangerous guy. So it's hard to, you know, it's kind of, to me, just guessing who's going to get the winner of Cotto Canelo, which is also a pretty evenly matched fight. Incidentally, I think De La Hoya at 54 knocks Cotto out. He's just too big, too fast, and the left hook is still dangerous. I just think, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, let's say Canelo wins and Triple G wins. I don't think they both go straight into that fight. I think they both take interim fights and build towards it. But I think Canelo is the kind of guy that wants that kind of fight. If Cotto wins, it's probably going to be an exciting fight. And they'll probably do a rematch. Maybe they do a rematch in order to avoid fighting Triple G. I don't think Cotto has any interest in fighting it. You know, as he put it, do I look like a middleweight? Even though he's wearing the middleweight champ's belt. So I think the chances are slim to none that Cotto ever faces Triple G, because I also don't think he's going to beat Canelo, but it's a long way off.
Well, remember, the WBC mandate, and again, they've been known to change their mind, but post Graziano Rocca Gianni, they haven't been nearly as brazen. They really haven't been. And K2 has very good lawyers, and they are looking at this situation. Cotto Canelo can fight a best of seven. The reality is that the last six fights may not be for the WBC title, which would be okay with Cotto or Canelo. And I think Tom Loeffler and Gennady have been very clear. We want all the belts one way or the other before we do anything else at any other division beyond 160. Gabe?
And they should stick to that plan. I think ultimately, you know, yeah, they would rather vacate than fight him. That'll probably be the likely thing. Let's hit the phone. And I got to say, Edner Cherry, you know, I like him just for the tall socks. In the 702, you're live on the next round.
I'm guessing that's me, or is that Robert Palmer?
No, this is you.
I don't think it's Robert Palmer.
Okay, yeah, I haven't heard from him in a while. I wonder where he's been. I lost.
Hopefully not on this show. Jeez, what a stalker that guy is. Good grief. What a creep. Seriously.
I'm good friends with him. I lost a bet with him once, and I paid up. And, yeah, but I just wanted to say, man, I thoroughly enjoyed the entire broadcast, man. I think every fight was pretty good. And I don't know, man, I just because I haven't been listening to the show, so I didn't get your analysis. But for me, I mean, Abner just seemed to have the wrong game plan. I think it was it may have in like on paper, it may have seemed good to outwork the guy who throws a million punches and push him back, because it seems like Leo can't really fight too good backing up. And he's definitely a lot better coming forward. But, you know, I know that Leo made the adjustment that he needed to make, but I feel that maybe this had a lot more to do with Abner gassing out so early, and then he just kind of couldn't keep up that pace. And, you know, people have thrown out a rematch. I didn't think it was a good enough fight to kind of warrant that, and, you know, it certainly became one-sided after a while. But I wouldn't mind seeing it based on, you know, the idea that maybe he could come up with a different game plan and box a little more early on and get stronger towards the end. And I don't know. I enjoyed the fight, but I don't know. How do you guys feel about that?
Gabe, I'm of the opinion that what happened in the second half of the fight would more or less take place if they fought again. But again, the variable is there's a reason why you fight the fights, and perhaps Abner Morris takes a different tack. You never know, because it's easy for us to have opinions, because long ago, if we would have done this show back in 1993, I would have told you that Evander Holyfield had no shot at beating Riddick Bowe in their rematch, and you saw what happened there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of what I'm leaning towards. That's a perfect example, Steve. I think, I don't know, a rematch could be pretty good. Do you have any idea of what the ratings are on this?
They have not announced anything yet.
Because I'm just wondering, because I watched it, you know, with some of my friends, and, you know, one of them's an MMA guy and everything, and we all enjoyed it. We had a good time watching the fights, and I'm just wondering, you know, how many people might have been in bars or whatever just perusing, or, you know, if you're a dude, 9 times out of 10, the first time the first time you turn on your TV, you go to ESPN, you know, and I just wonder how many decided to stick around and watch what turned out to be a pretty good card, and I hope a lot of people saw it, because I enjoyed it. And that's all. Thanks,
the pattern has been with ESPN, by Tuesday they will have some sort of press release, so I would look for it at that point to start coming up on the internet.
There you go. All right. Well, he just dropped off, but let's head to Oxnard. Nacho, you're live on the next round.
Nacho?
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, Nacho, what's going on?
Hello. Hey, what's up, guys? Nothing much.
What's
I haven't
up, man?
Talked to you guys in a while.
Yeah.
Not much. As far as the fight on Saturday, I actually got to go to it in person. And let me tell you, it's a good thing some of the undercard stuff was completely off television, because, man, some of those fights were just completely awful, to be honest.
Well, Nacho, in all due fairness, though, you could that's the case with most cards, with any promoter. That's just – as my friend Matt Swider once said, Steve, that's why it's meant to be off TV.
Okay, yeah, maybe you got a point. But real quick on that part of the card, I don't know who keeps talking to Angulo, but they need to tell him to give it up. He just looks awful at this point.
I got an idea. Loser and winner have to leave town at 160 whatever. Alfred Angulo, Jermaine Taylor, Spike TV. Oof. Oh, boy, that's bad. Yeah, you know what? Never mind.
Yeah,
how about
exactly.
Mosley Angulo?
Oh.
I mean, you know, they're kind of around. Yeah, I like Alfredo quite a bit. You know, I've covered him pretty in-depth. I really like the guy. I don't want to see him take more punches. And he's not – it doesn't seem like he went from one camp to another. I thought the last fight he looked okay. This fight, he looked really off. And I just think –
you know, getting him more fights more often isn't the problem. I think he's just he lost something in that time that he was away. He was never really fast, but he was, you know, he was kind of peaking and streaking, and then he lost all that time, and I think it just took something he'll never get back. It's really sad.
Yeah, he just doesn't look the same anymore. He just looks like a shop-worn dude at this point. So I don't know. I think they need to tell him to stop. And also, I was going to ask you guys, I don't know if you've seen, but apparently there's a rumor going around on Twitter that Shane Mosley announced that he said that he got 500,000 buys for his fight against Mayorga.
I think he's adding a zero on the right-hand side. The word going around was that he needed 40,000 to 50,000 to break even. And I'll be honest, I would be stunned if he even got that many. I mean, if he did that, that is not just a home run, that's a grand slam. Listen, it was what it was. This was always going to be an uphill battle for 10 different reasons. And again, I don't know where this is going, but I can assure you he did not get a $500,000 pay-per-view buys.
Yeah, I didn't think so either, but I just thought that was kind of hilarious that he put it out.
I mean, here, to put this into perspective, Nacho, last year the Martinez Cotto pay-per-view, and I got this from very good sources, did 315,000. So do you really think that what happened on Saturday night did about 165,000 more pay-per-views than Cotto Martinez?
No, I don't believe that for one second, but I just thought the rumor was, you know, being spread, but I was like, wow, that's pretty shocking if that really happened.
It seems a little early for those returns, too. You know, I mean, I just don't think they have it added up that quickly. Honestly, just watching the whole thing, and I was like, and he paid for all this, is what I just kept thinking. Like, this is how fighters go broke, you know? And I don't know if you guys saw this, but Jen Mosley was going off on Shane on Twitter. And she had a few things to say about Balco and other things, but she was basically saying that, and I had felt this way, I think I tweeted about it, that's not Shane running his Twitter account. And kind of watching everything, the staged butt slap all and the ensuing interviews where everybody's just, you know, Jack Mosley just kind of looks a little embarrassed. And the whole thing, it just seems like reality TV, but like improv'd. I just can't help but think like he's being kind of led down path once again. It just doesn't look good for Shane. I hope this is a one and done, but he's going to insist on spending his money and blowing it. I guess this will last as long as his bankroll lasts.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
Nacho, quick question. You're a boxing diehard. Next, not this Saturday, but two Saturdays from now, what are you doing at about 6 p.m. Pacific time? Are you ordering Berto Mayweather?
No, I'm going to tell you what we're doing. Me and a group of friends, we already talked about this. What we're doing is we're going to the local theater, and we're going to pay to watch it inside the movie theater. But we've already agreed. We're going to watch the first three fights, and we're walking out on the main event.
Wait a minute. Hold on. You're actually making that into a walkout bout.
Yes, I
am. Really? There's
not, yeah.
Okay. So, wait a minute. You're telling me that literally you're going to watch – about one, about two, about three, and even if you have half a tub of popcorn and two-thirds of your box of Jujubes left, you're bouncing. You're getting out of there.
Yeah, pretty much. We've already made the agreement, me and about six of my friends that are going. So, yeah, we pretty much agreed that we're walking out. So, yeah, that's what I'm doing. And it's only $20 to go watch it there instead of paying $75 for the stupid pay-per-view.
Sheesh. Nacho,
Cesar
make sure
Chavez
you give us.
Would be proud.
What happened?
I said Cesar Chavez would be proud. This is
Thank
how
you.
Mr. started. You're welcome. You're welcome. My father marked Cesar. So, yeah, man. Do it.
Yeah,
Nacho,
exactly.
That following Monday, please give us a call and let me know what your experience was like as you stage the walkout 2015.
All right. No problem.
I like it.
All right. Later.
Thank you, Nacho.
Wow, Mexicans against Mayweather. You know, we had Mexicans for Triple G. This is how it happens. You know, get all those guys to register to vote. So when Trump's running, you know, 510, you're live on the next round.
Hey, Gabe. Hey, Steve. How you guys doing?
What's up?
This is Fernando over here across the bridge in Richmond. I got a quick question. What's going on with Kovalev?
It really seems like his career lately is going in the wrong direction. You know, ever since he turned down Adonis Stevenson, that fight got turned down. You don't really hear anything about what's coming up for him, nothing to get excited about. You heard about, like, the Better Be fight. That might be something that works, but that just sounds like it was just a face-saving thing for Cassie Dubois. She doesn't really plan on doing it. So what's going on with Cole? Thanks.
I think she made that offer knowing where that was going to go, and that was to Bolivia. Now, Kathy, a week or two ago, was in Russia. The plan is to fight sometime, I believe, in November in Russia. Nothing's been finalized. I talked to Kathy a little bit late last week. There's nothing really to announce. They got to tie up some loose ends. But, yes, right now they're kind of in that vortex where I don't know. Are they just waiting for the PBC to go belly up? Because we don't know when that's going to be. But it is interesting to me that after going on this really good run after Hopkins and Pascal, looking forward now, Gabe, what does Kovalev do for the time being?
Maybe Mohammadi has a brother. I don't know. That's a good question. And I think people waiting for the PBC to go belly up, one, I think that's a really passive strategy. It's waiting for the other guy to run out of money and fail. But two, I just think they're going to be here all the way to the end of 2016. So,
At least.
I tend to think they're not going away. I mean, it's not like the networks are all about quality control, you know. They let reality TV spread like the virus that it is. You know, why are they going to stop this product, which if it after a while pulls people in and the ratings kind of go the other way, man, we're kind of stuck with this. Do you do a rematch with Pascal? Finishing the job? I don't know. I'd just be guessing at this point. But it does seem a little bit lost. Like, you know, the Top Rank is doing their litigation with the PBC. Main Event's tried theirs and pulled back. But it's like, okay, now what? You know, you're going to have to out-promote these guys. And Top Rank's having a lost year, and Kovalev's kind of cruising in that direction. They better figure something out.
You know, it's a real shame because I think Kovalev, if he would have been managed right, like maybe by Tom Loeffler, I think he could have been a bigger star than Triple G is. He has the attitude. He might make a much better B side because if you put Triple G, in with Canelo, his whole fan base is going to evaporate, especially if it's in Los Angeles. They're going to boo him. If I go to that fight, I'm going to boo Triple G whether I love him. You know, it's a shame, man. Kovalev is just really a fun fighter to watch. He fights with an attitude. Mexicans could have really got into him. They would have brought him up to the West Coast. Just the same time they would have brought Triple G. I think he would have been just as big a star or even bigger just because he has a good attitude for it. He's got a bad attitude. He really needs to be a star.
I do think that – thank you for the call. But, Gabe, again, I think we talked about this a week or two ago. There was a particular strategy of Kathy Duva where he was the A-side to stick in Atlantic City. Folks, Atlantic City might as well be Atlantis. Stuck underwater. That's a dead market. While Tom Loeffler took some chances, went out to L.A., rented some big rooms, and created something. And I'm not saying it's too late for Coppola, because I don't think it is. But the particular route that they took, you see where they are currently.
Yeah. The stars are made out west, I think, you know. And I agree with the caller that, you know, Kovalev is exciting. And he's got that kind of – he just doesn't give a damn attitude, but with a smile. He could have been, I think, just as big of a star. That's an interesting thing that he said, though, that, you know, when it comes to time for Canelo versus Triple G, that Triple G is going to get booed. I mean, do you agree with that?
Not entirely. Let me just say one thing. Like De La Hoya, there's a group – or a segment of Mexican Americans, they're not big Canelo fans. And I was there for the heyday of De La Hoya, who was about as popular as you can be as a Mexican American. Yet there were a lot of Mexicans that every single time he fought, they weren't cheering for him. And I think that dynamic exists with Canelo.
Yeah, and I think Mexicans, you know, they do sometimes adopt one that isn't quite their own, because we are kind of a mishmash race, you know, to be perfectly frank. We're a mixture of Spanish and, you know, and Indians.
from different regions. So I think sort of we do have a habit of that. Like, you know, the Mexican Mafia has Joe Morgan. Mexican boxing has Steve Kim. So I think, you know, it's also got Triple G. So, yeah, I don't agree. I think the guys that love Triple G are going to be cheering for him. And there's some that might see Canelo as a little bit of a product. So I don't know. I don't know who I'd be rooting for in that fight. It's a hell of a fight. Let's go back to L.A. Sanch, you're live on the next round.
Hello, guys. This is David from Los Angeles.
Oh, welcome aboard.
I had a question, but it was answered. But now that you went on that part of that a lot of Mexicans will not support, you know, not all Mexicans support Canelo. You're right. You're right on that path because myself, being Mexican American, I would support Triple G or Canelo. I don't like Canelo, actually.
Why not? Is it the freckles? Is it the red hair?
He can't cut off the ring, and I feel that he should have rematched Austin Trout because that decision still seems a little nutty to me.
Now, how long have you been a Golovkin fight fan?
Oh, I've been a Golovkin fan since he was in Germany, actually.
Okay.
I'm a guy that, like, you know, keeps an eye on all of boxing, even if it's in Europe. And I even when he was when he got stuck for like a couple of years by Stern, I actually had my eye out there.
Interesting. Now, have you been? How many Golovkin fights have you been to? Did you go to the one at the StubHub or the Forum?
Yeah, I've been to the one in the StubHub and the one in the Forum.
Right, because this is where I disagree with that previous caller. And again, I know that Marco Antonio Rubio is not nearly the figure or the brand of Canelo Alvarez, but the StubHub fight was very interesting. They sold over 9,000 tickets above capacity. And as the two fighters were getting ready to square off after they had touched gloves, and I'm looking around, and at least I would say two-thirds to three-quarters of that audience was Mexican or Mexican-American, and there was no doubt that you might as well be in Kazakhstan because a loud Triple G chant started about 10 seconds before that fight, and I said, wow, the Mexican is on the road here. Anything else we could do for you?
Well, that was all. I just wanted to make that point because I still remember being at a uncle's home to watch Vargas versus Oscar De La Hoya, and my uncle and his side of the family wanted Vargas to knock out Oscar, and me and my dad wanted Oscar to win.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for
there
the call. We appreciate it. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, and you want to send us a tweet, at SteveUCN Live and at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe, anyone else on the phone lines here?
Yeah, we got three more to go. I think most of our audience is probably already at Burning Man by then. So a little slim today.
Lucky them.
707, you're live on the next round. 707?
Or not.
Or not. Might be one of my bearded stalkers. 714, you're live on the show.
Cool.
What's going on here? Hello? Hello?
Just dropped into a scene from Carlito's Way. 813, you're live on the next round. 813 is gone. All right, Steve, that concludes the caller portion of our show.
All right, a couple of extra news and notes here before we call it a day. And, again, next week we will not be here. It'll be our classic traditional Labor Day vacation. But September 6th, I believe, is Sunday, Gabe, on CBS. Anthony Durrell takes on Marco Antonio Rubio. Jamie McDonald takes on Tomoki Kameda. The first fight between McDonald and Kameda was very competitive, good solid prize fight. But, Gabe, Anthony Durrell, who just lost his 168 title, fighting Marco Antonio Rubio. This has been the prototypical PBC bout too many times, Gabe.
This is brutal. And I would say, like, takes on is a little bit of a strong phrase, you know, considering, you know, that one guy is an established 68, and the other guy was more of a 54 that's just kind of up in weight at this point, just for the payday.
this is going to be pretty brutal. I mean, if the Triple G Rubio fight is any indication, this is going to be a very short night. And just, I think it's bad on the sanctioning bodies, and or rather the athletic commission. Oh, wait a minute, it's Texas. Anything goes. I can't see how this fight got even made, just in terms of the weight and the histories.
All right, well, that's it for this week's edition of The Next Round. A reminder, we'll be back in 2 Mondays. So on behalf of Gabriel Montoya and the rest of the Leave It in the Ring radio network, this is Steve Kim saying till the next round, goodbye, everybody.